she said that she was like me, a bar hopper. And her mother helped her, and I had a relative help me get into these doors. So at this time, I would love to welcome Erin.
Hi everybody, I'm Erin, I'm alcoholic.
Hey Erin, love you Erin.
Lots and lots and lots. I'm a little nervous, but God, about 45 minutes I'll start feeling really good. I'm like, hey! I don't know if I've gotten sober yet, but I'm almost finished. It happens to me sometimes, but I'd like to start out by thanking the committee. Sandy was, it was very nice to get, you know, to get the letter, but when I first got asked to come here, Frank, that's his name, right?
Jack.
I knew it a minute ago, but we were at the State Assembly, and I don't know if anyone here knows Enos and Maddie Lou from Camilla, but they come running up to me at the State Assembly. It's like, there she is, and, you know, here these guys come running up, and Jack asked me if I would come and speak at the West Georgia Gratitude Weekend, and I was, you know, honored. And I said, yes, thank you very much. And they said, well, you're the young person speaker. And and I was flattered, you know, and I laughed and I said, well, God, you know, if anybody knows Enos, you could put just about anybody next to Enos, and they'd be, they would be a young person. He's about old as dirt there, so sweet. So I thought, well, but anyways, the committee has been great. Stacy, like she said, you know, she's, Sandy said, do you want to host? And I thought that was really, I thought it was neat. And, you know, this is a great place. The hospitality here has been wonderful. And the clubhouse is great. It's not my first time being here, but I really like the way that you guys have this set up and have it geared towards the family. And I've been here for a couple different occasions, and it's a real good deal. It really doesn't get much better than this because, you know, alcoholism is a family disease, and the family should be in recovery. And anyways, I'm very grateful to be here. I'm nervous, but it's going to get better in just a few minutes, I'm sure. And, you know, I don't have any problem talking, you know, whether it relates to anything besides the point. And, you know, sometimes I go off on little tangents here and there, and I think I just have some brain damage, really. And so if I just stop and I forget what I'm talking about, you guys can talk to each other, and I might remember, okay, where was I, and I'll come back. But, you know, really, my fiancé sometimes he'll look at me, and I'll just, you know, he'll say, honey, back here, you know, come back to the real world. But anyways, I am an alcoholic, and I'm also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that's important. And my home group is the Norcross group. I've just recently moved up here, and it's just my new home group. And that's that's something I think that's a little hard for an AA member. It's been difficult for me. I mean, it's been exciting. I got sober at the Byron Warehouse group. I'm from Middle Georgia, and after 2 years of sobriety, I moved to Valdosta to go to school, and it didn't take too long, really. Valdosta's small, and I really got in there and got into all my service work and all my friends and everything, and now I've moved to Norcross, and it's big up there, and there's a lot of meetings, you know, and I thought I could really see how it would be really easy. You know, you're not accountable to your home group as much as you were in the small towns, and, you know, it could be easy, and so it's something that I've had to, you know, to work on, to join a group. We meet once a week on Thursday night, and that's a little different, too. There's a lot of groups that meet once a week, but what I found out, there's a lot of small groups around Lilburn and Norcross that only meet once a week, but it's all a lot of the same people. So, anyways, I've done that, and grateful to be here. When I first got sober, I used to listen to speaker tapes all the time. My mother has a whole, you know, big old slew, her and my stepfather. went to conventions all the time. My first year sober, I went to 10 conventions. I had all these little things. They dragged me around. I mean, I was thrown slap in the middle of it. But I would listen to all these AA speakers, you know, and I can remember the feeling, the laughter, you know, like you were talking about. And I wanted to thank Jenny and Chet both for your messages. I identify with both of you. I've never dated a man that wasn't alcoholic, so if alcohol didn't affect me the way it did, I know I would have married an alcoholic. But you know, I'm positive of it. But I identified with both of you guys. But I would listen to those speaker tapes and I would laugh, but then I would also think, wow, one day that'll be me. And I'll be a convention speaker in like a huge stadium, you know, with all these people adoring me, you know, and then more sobriety. I can remember thinking that, you know, it's just like total ego and self-centeredness. And, you know, right now I'm like, I can't wait to finish, but, you know, in the beginning. But I do have to say that I am still very sensitive. And I know they say that if you need to smoke, you can go outside, but if a bunch of people like get up and leave, I'll start getting really I'm real sensitive / self-centered. But, you know, I'm probably thinking to myself, God, what did I say? I must not be like keeping their attention and they're leaving. But well, I guess I'll start with I'll start by talking about my fear of people. I think that's a good place for me to start. You know, it's through being an Alcoholics Anonymous that this really is a miracle for me to be up here behind a podium talking to you people. Because, and I think that's one of the reasons, well, I know that when I drank, when I ingested alcohol, I drank because of the effects of alcohol. I was so scared of people that in elementary school, I can remember, you would read a story and have your book open and you would go around the room and it would start at the front of the row and each child would have to read a paragraph. And so I wouldn't be paying any attention to the other people. I would count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and I would count the paragraphs down to my paragraph and I could read. I didn't have any learning disabilities or anything, you know, and I'd read my paragraph over and over and over and my heart would be pounding. It would pound, I don't know if anybody can identify with this, beating so hard that my ears would be pounding. Just the fear of having to even read that paragraph out loud in front of the class. And, you know, and so for me to, you know, start out in the meetings just being able to share with somebody. But I do have to admit that in the early in the beginning when I was going to meetings, you know, the topic would be whatever, gratitude, self-centered, whatever it was. You know, it all turns out to be gratitude at the end of the discussion meeting. It should. If you're in a good group, it should turn out to be gratitude at the end of the meeting. I can remember early on in sobriety, you know, my mom was in, and I would go home and I'd say, Mom, you know, the topic was this. And I'd say, and this is what I said. And I would tell her, like, exactly what I said. I said, how do you think that sounded, you know? And she would say, if you think for 1 second one person even remember what you said after it came out of your mouth, I'd be like, ouch. My own mom, you know, but I started to realize that it didn't matter what I said, you know. It was probably 2 months over. Who listened to me anyway? But, oh gosh, my drinking career, I started drinking at a young age. The first time I remember getting drunk, though, was when I was 13 years old, and I drank Southern Comfort out of the bottle behind the Zippy Mart. We used to go in there, smoke cigarettes, and play the pinball machine, and I was like the kid that you see him on the, see him hanging out with the black t-shirts and the ripped jeans. And the cigarettes hanging out of their pocket with an attitude. That was me. That was me. And, ooh, y'all got a bug down there?
Oh,
oh my.
But he's not leaving.
It's an owl frog.
An owl frog. I was very much, though, the little rebellious kind of a adolescent child, and those are the kind of people that I hung out with as well. What's funny though, that the first night that I remember getting drunk, I was sitting there and we were drinking Southern Comfort out of the bottle and passing the bottle around, and it was in February, I think, January, February. I remember it being really cold, and we would pass the bottle around. I remember how it felt going down, and it was burning. We had like a bonfire, and we had all of us around in our big heavy coats, and as I drank and I got warm, my coat came off, and then we drank some more, and then my shirt came off. You just keep drinking. I remember just like feeling so free and running around in that field out there, all drunk and tripping over stuff. But I remember the freedom that I felt from drinking, and you know, that continued on, that pattern, really, drinking and taking my clothes off continued throughout my drinking career. And you know, sometimes it's not quite as acceptable as in a field somewhere, but it doesn't change places. Did you take your clothes off a lot, Chet? But anyways, I don't have to. I do that. If I do, it's by choice today, I guess. I did want to say too, since we're talking about gratitude, I want to thank my mother and Miss Catherine, who is my mom's best friend and a dear friend, and then my great friend Mike for coming here. And just like you said, how many times they've heard me speak. You know, it's just incredible that people come and support you. And you know, with all of the stuff that's been going on, and my life has changed since I got sober. I mean, I have changed and my life has changed, and those are the rocks in the stream, you know, and I'm so very grateful for the rocks in the stream. So I woke up in the hotel room with Mike this morning. That's not the first time we've woke up in the hotel together. We've been to a lot of conventions together, and that's, I remember, well, we went to Augusta one time, and we had this new guy with us. So I told you I would completely get off the subject. But, and it was like one of the cheapest hotels, like, you know, maybe $15 a night. I don't know, it might not be quite that cheap. But Mike's tall, and he had to duck down to walk in the room. But there was some kind of a shindig going on over there, and there was another girl we took, Al. Remember Al? And he like really freaked him out that we were all going to stay. Ann and I slept in the bed together, and then Mike and Al. And so he didn't quite get over that. I don't know if he stayed sober too long after we made him sleep with Mike. He probably thought, I don't know if I want any part of this program. He's back, though. I saw him in Warner Robins last time. But anyways, back to my drinking. Gosh, I guess, my drinking, it was bad. We sat around one night, though, me and my teenage friends, and we were drinking like we did. We were passing around Jack Daniels. It was always whiskey back then, and I threw up all the time. And I didn't think about this. I hadn't thought about it in a long time, but we used to, before we would go out, this is kind of, I guess, just crazy thinking, but we would eat bread and just kind of absorb it up, and me and my friends would sit there with loaves of bread, eating lots of bread, trying not to throw up, because we knew we were going to all throw up, and we eat bread, and then we drink Pepto-Bismol, everything, and you know, and we're all teenagers, and we're sitting there drinking, passing around the Jack Daniels, and all of our parents were in AA. And we're sitting there drinking, and it's like, gosh, you know, and this is at like 15. Do you think one day that we're going to have to go to AA? I can remember having that conversation. And the funny thing about that is that's probably the most honest that I was about my drinking, because I was drinking alcoholically at 15. You know, I was drinking until I blacked out, passed out, and ended up places I had no intention of going at 15. And there was some, you know, light of honesty through that conversation, I think, because the more I drank and as the years went on, the further and further away from my mind that I was an alcoholic, the more I went into that delusional thinking that the big book talks about. It was never the alcohol that was my problem. It was all of the other things that were my problems. The reason that my life stayed so stirred up was because of the guys I dated and the jobs I had and I was in a hurricane. That was a good one. Hurricane Hugo. I got a lot of mileage out of Hurricane Hugo because, you know, I lost everything I had, and by God, that was a poor, pitiful situation there. And so I used that to drink for a while after that. But I don't know. My life for the next 10 years, I moved to Fort Walton Beach and with my high school sweetheart, and then I moved to the Virgin Islands with another guy after that. And you know, I would like to go back in sobriety sometime to St. Croix. I lived in St. Croix for 4 years, and I had a lot of good times in St. Croix. You can drink in St. Croix. It's so acceptable. And I'm not going to say I had all bad times drinking, because I didn't. You know, I had some really good times drinking, maybe not at the end of the night. That was the problem. But, you know, in the whole hoopla of it right in the beginning, but then people without the disease, I guess, stop or whatever. But I was just such a bitter to the bitter end kind of a gal. And I was introduced to some other stuff over in the Virgin Islands, and I got in a lot of trouble. And I got into a lot of trouble and got fired from a job, and actually got fired from two jobs, and I'd always been a good employee. And I reflect back now and think about, you know, my work history and how I had changed. You know, early on, I was a really good employee. I was dependable. I showed up on time to work. I would always get promoted. I worked as a waitress from the time I was like 15 at Shoney's, and then I started working where they served booze. It was better. And then once you work in the bars, you know, they don't have to mess with the food anymore. But I could see my whole personality changing over the years of my drinking. I no longer was a good employee at all. And, you know, plus I would steal from, we wouldn't call it stealing, though. You know, we would say, when you pad people's tabs, you know, that they weren't going to tip me enough, so, you know, they're drunk. I loved waiting on drunks. That, you know, if somebody's going to drink 15 beers, they're not going to know they didn't have 17, and so, you know, or whatever. But, yeah, great, you know, and we would drink on the job and whatnot. But when I was in the Virgin Islands, I had a lot of people that tried to help me down there, and they saw what was happening. It was really, we were drinking every day, but it was so acceptable to drink down there. It was, there were a lot of alcoholics in there. You know, a bottle of rum was $1.89, and it was more acceptable to drive your car with a bottle of rum in your hand than it would be for a male to, like, not have a shirt on, or a woman not to have, just have her bikini top on. They were, like, extremely conservative in that nature. It was kind of weird, you know, but you could just drink all you wanted to. Nobody thought anything about that. And, like I said, I got mixed up with some other stuff, and, a boss of mine, this is after I had lost that job, and I went to her for money because I had gotten to the point where I had pawned off everything. I started that little cycle of, you know, I pawned off my senior ring first, and then I pawned off a diamond and emerald ring that, you know, had gotten a long time ago, and, you know, stuff like that. And people, it's a small community. It's like Mayberry. Everybody knew. Everybody knew. And all those feelings, it's really the first time I think that I had started feeling those feelings of guilt and shame, and being so ashamed of myself because everybody knew what kind of person I was, and I owed a lot of people money. And so this old boss, I went to her to tell her that it was his fault, so could she give me some money, you know. It was his fault, the guy I was with, and she looked at me and she said, "Aaron," what did she say? Well, I remember now. She said, "Life is not a dress rehearsal. You know, life is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. You don't get to do it again." And I thought, what are you talking about? Give me some money. That's what I thought. You know, it didn't make any sense to me right then, you know. And as a matter of fact, she did give me some money that night. And for some strange reason, she's one of the people that I pay back. I said, I don't know why, but it was something kind of eerie about that that whole conversation. She knew and she wanted to help me, and I was nowhere near ready to get help at that point. But I do remember that I got a number, and I still to this day don't know where I got it, but it said it was a drug hotline. And I don't know how I got it, who gave it to me, but like I said, we were crazy and we were drinking and staying up all night and doing some wild stuff. And one morning, it was another morning, I used to could say, God, if I could just go to bed before the sun comes up. That was like something for me, you know. And of course, I didn't again. And I was really sick and tired, and I got this number. And we didn't have a phone, and I go trucking up all these stairs, and I get to this payphone, and I'm just really at my bottom, I felt. But it never had anything to do with drinking. See, if you'd have said alcohol was a problem, and I said, alcohol, it's the other stuff. And so I think in my mind that happened for a reason, that I called this number, and I'm crying, and this lady answers the phone, and she says, St. Croix Police Department, Narcotics Division. And I was like, and I started bawling. I'm like, what, you know, they're going to arrest me? Do they have their dad? And I'm like crying. I'm like, oh my God, I've got a problem. And she was like, man, this is the Narcotics Division. And I hung the phone up, and I was so angry. And I thought to myself, I reached out for help, by God, you know. And I kind of carried that as I had a little resentment when I came into AA, and everybody's talking about, you know, when you're ready and you hit your bottom. I thought, well, I hit a bottom and God didn't help me, and you know, whatever. But I really do know that I would have never taken a look at my drink. Yeah, I would have not looked at my drinking at that point. So I hadn't started morning drinking yet. And so I wasn't ready, you know. And what happened after the hurricane, and I left the Virgin Islands, and that relationship with that guy ended, and, you know, it was a wild time when I came back to Warner Robins. I swore I was never going to come back to Georgia, because, you see, I was better than Georgia once I had lived in the Virgin Islands, you know. And it was this delusional fantasy in my head. See, I was a waitress, which there's nothing wrong with being a waitress. Believe you me, I made more money waiting tables than I've ever made on any job in my life. But I would wait on these people that would come to the Virgin Islands that had a lot of money, and they would drink all this expensive liquor and the expensive wines, and I learned how to say, you know, Côte d'Ivoire, and, you know, do the wine thing, you know, and I knew all of this, you know, all of the fancy appetizers and this, that, and the other, and, you know, people from Middle Georgia just don't have the kind of class that I have. And I thought, you know, I thought, oh, God, do not take me back to Georgia with guys with pickup trucks with gun racks on the back of it, you know. I just thought, I do not fit in there. And, you know, I know too much now about society. But the thing was, is that, you know, I was living in a little apartment under the restaurant. It's like gravel. It's like the dumpsters right by the where you go into my apartment at. But it didn't click with me. I was I was delusional about what my life was like. And, I so much related to Chet when he talked about waking up and being on the part of the cement that was up, and he was like, oh, good, I didn't get wet. And see, I can identify with that so much. It wouldn't be like, you know, oh my God, it's like, whoo, you know, hey, I'm still here. I was so resilient. You know, I've come home and put my key in the door and it didn't fit because my roommate kicked me out. You know, I've had the cops evict, you know, been evicted and had them towed all my stuff and put it on the street, you know. And I'm like, whatever, just, you know, very resilient when you drink and things like that. Just don't. And so I can really identify with that that kind of thinking. It's so bizarre. I look at my life today, and it's really good for me to remember that I thought like that, you know. It's like, hey, move into a new apartment, just, you know, take a blanket and a hammer and nail and nail a blanket up over the window, and, you know, got a cooler there or whatever, that's furniture, let's drink and go to work, you know. And and, you know, I never thought about things like thread counts and china patterns and follow that. I still don't, really. But, you know, it's weird because I guess I've always felt inferior to other women. You know, I didn't make the cheerleading team when I was in seventh grade. And I was good. I was athletic, and I was in gymnastics, but I was so scared of people that when I had to run out in the auditorium to do my little cheer, I don't remember if I froze or if I didn't finish, if I just did it real quick and ran out, but I mean, it was so, it was just a really traumatic experience for me, and I blamed that I didn't make cheerleading, and so I had went with this crowd, and I was never with those girly girls, and the cheerleaders, and I had such deep resentments for those women through my drinking career. And as I was working, later on I came back, and then I got the job as a cocktail waitress, and that's really a beautiful thing for an alcoholic, to be a cocktail waitress. It's beautiful, it really is, because you can go in so hungover, and, you know, your boss says, you know, take a shot of Cuervo, it will help you feel better, you know, and that's the kind of boss that I needed to work for. And, you know, a shot of Cuervo, and calm yourself down, and I would sit there, and I was a cocktail waitress, and the women would come in from the secretaries and stuff at happy hour, and they all looked so together. You know, in my mind, I compared how I felt inside with what they looked like outside. But you know, since I've come to AA, there are women from everywhere that come in with those same feelings. So it's been a really good learning experience for me. And my best friend in Valdosta, Mary, she just has been the most wonderful person in my life, and she really helped me a lot in Valdosta. I miss her. But she has a room with a sewing machine in it, and she like makes clothes, and she knows all of that stuff, you know. And her and I are best friends, and talk about, you know, me, I put tinfoil over all my windows one time at this place I lived at so the sun wouldn't come in and, like, hurt my eyes in the morning. So I got sick of it one day, and I took tinfoil and covered all my windows. So, you know, I wasn't the best interior decorator that there was. And I didn't know about things like, you know, like I said, thread counts and domestic artsy craftsy. But I think really, you know, alcohol, it kills so much of your creativity. It killed a lot of my creativity, maybe I should put it like that. You know, when you just, I thought about it before, there were so many years I just never, when you drink, you don't sleep right. You know, up and down, who could ever be, I don't know how people can drink and be creative. I never even thought about any of that stuff. And so here's Mary is, Miss, you know, she's been homemaker, and she makes clothes, and she has a china cabinet and all this stuff. And her, I just like that. So that was a big lesson for me. But, you know, that's one of the joys of recovery for me, is that I was able to identify those kinds of feelings and feeling inferior and work through those fears and to love other women, you know, and be a little bit better. I'm not going to stand here and tell you sometimes a woman doesn't come in and I think, that's not nearly as bad as it was. it's a lot better than it was. We used to say you can tell the length of a woman's sobriety by the length of her skirt, you know. And I try not to think like that today, you know. I'm really glad that I've been through a lot of the stuff that I've been through so that women come into AA. I don't ever want to be too cleaned up. You know, I feel like I need to clean up and show up, and, you know, to be behind the podium, you know, I need to respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and I do respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try never to use profanity, and really, I try real hard not to use profanity in my everyday life, because it kind of makes me spiritually sick when I get on that, and I know something's going on, but... you know, I want women to be able to approach me and not think like I used to think. You know, I came in, you know, I had a Harley jacket on, biker with the long I remember my first AA meeting. I wore a Harley Davidson T-shirt. I had lots of red lipstick on because I wanted, and I didn't want to cry so much. I didn't want to cry, you know. And so I always want to remember that I need to be approachable to other women. But wow, I don't want to keep drinking forever. But I'm kind of, I guess I'm just talking however I need to talk. Some about recovery, some about drinking, but. I will tell you how I finally got here is I had moved back to Warner Robins, and I got married 6 months after I got out of that relationship that I was in St. Croix. Within 6 months, I was walking down the aisle, and I thought to myself, what am I doing? You know, I met this guy, and we went to Florida partying, and on the way down there we were both talking about our DUIs that we had, and we had a cooler in the back, and so it was like he was a habitual violator. I only had one, and I didn't really deserve, I really didn't deserve the one I had, you know, really. You know, they treated me bad. I was all dressed up, and really I was just getting ready to go out that night. I had just had a couple like pre-warm-ups before you go to the bar. You don't ever go in without gearing up, without getting a little geared up, and you know, I didn't even make it to the club. And so I registered just at the point where you could get a DUI. And what's so funny about my way of thinking is I remember thinking, all right, my name's going to be in the paper, and I'm working at the bar, and the first thing everybody asks is, what'd you register? And I thought, I sure would like to have been able to say, like, 2.5 or something, you know? You know, and that's the kind of thinking, who wants to say 1.0, you know, or 0.1, whatever it is. It was the minimum there that they could get you, and, you know, if that's not screwed up thinking, I don't know what is. But, you know, everybody I knew had a DUI, and, you know, you wanted to be able to really register high to be, you know, be in there in that click, whatever click it was. Thank God I'm not in it today. But I married this guy. We got to Florida. We celebrated by doing a shot of tequila, and we decided that we needed to get married, and we were in love. And 6 weeks from the time I met him, I was walking down the aisle thinking, what in the world am I doing? I had no idea. Everyone told me, don't do it, and you know, that's probably not a good thing to say. And so I did, and it was a rocky, abusive, drunk marriage for 10 months. It was bad news. And so, but the thing about it is when we divorced, I really had those feelings of failure. I was a failure. I was a failure at school. I could never stay in college. I would register all the time to take classes, and I would say, okay, I'll take 8 a.m. classes. That way, when I get off work, I won't drink. I'll go home, and I'll get up the next morning. So that was my plan, and I would try that, you know, and I'll have 2 beers. And the thing about I think one of the greatest reliefs for me is when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I finally understood it's the first drink that gets you drunk. And that was so powerful for me. I'm sure that it had been told to me. I mean, I grew up with the slogans are all over the house, you know. They're listening to tapes and laughing and bringing drunks home. And, you know, AA was everywhere in my house. You know, but it didn't have any effect on my drinking. I'll put it that way. I mean, I don't know. I knew where to go when I reached my bottom, and that's what I'm grateful for. And, AA was never shoved down my throat. I think my mother learned her lesson from my brother. Yeah, they did a number on him, but they, she would say passing things, like when I would come rolling through, they did move out to San Francisco, but I guess that was just another, you know, it was real geographical. I was going to turn my life, you know, turn my life around, and one of those times when I came whizzing through, maybe on my way back to the Virgin Islands, and she said, Erin, do you think your life seems a little unmanageable? And see, I knew what that meant, because I knew that what the steps meant, you know, I knew, and I'm thinking, don't even try. And there was I think one time during my drinking, when I moved back to Georgia, I had to move home with her or something. I don't remember, but I remember her getting on the phone and talking to those people in AA. And I know she was talking to him. She, because she does that, she sighs a lot. Yes, Erin's home, and she's working on turning her life around, you know, or something. That's what I heard. And I would be so angry and so resentful, you know. I thought, you know, I know what she thinks. She thinks that I'm drinking too much, but she doesn't understand because that's not it. That's not it. But she never did try to, she never did try to say, you need to stop drinking or you need to go to a meeting or anything. Thank God. I'm really grateful that she didn't. But what she did do is after I divorced and I really went into some heavy drinking, this was when, like I said, I learned about the morning drink and I learned to always have the vodka. I turned into just where I drank vodka and I kept it in the freezer. It was just, you know, nothing like that morning drink for me. And I also discovered Imitra, which is a nausea medicine that if you can't get it down, that will help. So I hope no one has to take that tip from me and use Imitra for nausea. But it's really weird now to think about what my bedside table would look like with opening up and the like thing of aspirin, always trying to keep something by the bed to drink, and the Imitra and the vodka in the freezer. But I had so low feeling of self-esteem and self-worth and where men were concerned and everything. And there was this period in my life, you know, before I always had a boyfriend, kept a boyfriend, no matter what they were like, really, but I always wanted that long-term relationship, you know. And I guess bad breath is better than no breath at all. I would stay with them, you know, stay with them, whatever. And so insane, but I always like to have a boyfriend, a steady boyfriend. And so at this period of my life, like the next year, I became, you know, promiscuous and just out. And, you know, I was so angry, I think, at men, at my ex-husband. He was on the top of my resentment list. And, you know, it was just, screw it. That's how I felt. And how injurious that was to me, I didn't really realize. And I would sit at home, and I had this chair, and it's really good for me to remember this because I brought this chair with me when I moved to Norcross. I got it out of storage at my mom's, and it's a big old chair, and it has cigarette burns in the side of it. And I would sit there at late at night, and I would drink, and I'd smoke cigarettes, and I would get my phone book out, you know, 3 in the morning, calling people, and you know, just whoever you could get to talk to you, and how lonely I was. And I would sit with my little dog, her name's Abby, she's a West Island Terrier, and I would have her like a baby, because, you know, at this point, I was 27, 28, didn't have any children, my marriage just failed, when am I ever going to have kids, you know, blah, 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 and it was so sad, it really was sad, though. And I would sit there with my baby, my dog, and I'd rock back and forth in that chair, drunk, and I would sing to her, you are my sunshine, my only sunshine. It was so sad, you know. It's funny now, but really, that chair is such a reminder for me that Jim was like, Erin, that chair, that's my fiance now. And I was like, I'm bringing it with me because my past is my best asset. You know, if I don't remember what times used to be like, I'm in big trouble. So that's why it's good to do this kind of thing for me as well. But it wasn't long after that, and the phone would ring, and I wouldn't want to answer the phone, and the answering machine would pick up, and it would be, Erin, this is your mother. You know, I haven't talked to you. We're in the same town. I haven't talked to you in 2 weeks. I love you. And I think, oh. And I moved out into the country so that I would get better. And the country, you know, the trees and all that. What it was, you had to drive further into town to the club, and you had more of a chance of getting a DUI having to drive all that way home. That's what what happened with that. But, you know, I can remember when I first came into AA, I said to my sponsor, what do you do to have fun? How do you have fun? And what is so insane about that is when I lived, and many times though, but when, for instance, when I lived out in that little trailer in the country, I had been up for a couple of days drinking and doing my thing, and I was seeing things. And I was looking out the front window, and I saw the guys in their military combat getup, and they were like running in the woods across them, and they would duck, and they were coming behind the trees and everything, and they were coming to get, I'm sitting by myself, and the air conditioner had gone out, and I'm in a trailer in July. So I haven't bathed, and I've been out for a couple of days, and I'm like wacko crazy, and I'm sweating, and all I can remember thinking is, please come get me and end this insanity. But I saw him, it was real. And it, I don't know if it was the same day or not, but a day that my mother came and knocked on the door, and I was in that same kind of shape. I don't remember if it was the same day, but it very well might have been. And when I saw her car pull in the driveway, I went in the bathroom and shut the door and got inside the shower and shut the shower curtain. Just so it was like, so she really wouldn't be able to see me. And you know, that that's very sad to have to live like that. So, you know, that's insanity for me to say, well, if you come to AA and quit drinking, when are you going to have any fun? Because, you know, that was fun, wasn't it? That was terrible. You know, that's like, hello. So, since I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have not had to crawl, you know, across the floor, peep out the windows, run into the bathroom, pull the shower curtain so my mother can't see me. You know, I just don't have to do those kinds of things. And I don't have to, you know, sleep with married men or sleep with people that I don't want to. I just don't have to do any of that stuff today, you know, thank God. And I don't really know what time I started talking. I got a little off track here. How long? Okay. Well, I'm going to stop here real soon, but I did want to touch on what's going on in my life today. And what happened was I came home from a two-day bender. I had some money because I got an income tax return. I claimed my dog as my dependent. So I didn't really want to work, but I figured this way. I had this accountant. He's a drunk, and we figured out, I don't know how we did it. I had to pay it back. But I figured out a way. So I had some money, and I wasn't in the worst shape, in the worst place. I had left the last guy I was with. I moved back home with my mother. And I was driving home after being out a couple of days, and the sun was coming up over the interstate, and a divine thing happened to me. In the pit of my stomach, I just said to, I don't know whether I said it aloud or what, I just said, God, I banged my hands on the steering wheel. I cannot live like this anymore. I just cannot do this anymore. And I mean, I had a place to go home to. I still had money. I certainly wasn't in the worst spot before. I've been homeless before. I've been kicked out and not had a place to live. So I'm just so grateful that that happened. Turns out, I told my mother I needed help and I was crazy when I got home, and she called Miss Catherine, and those beautiful support system that I had getting sober. I had girls come and 12-step me. I went to sleep. Told Stacy this story last night. I went to bed. I had been up. I'm like, I need help. You know, and you feel a little different. You feel a little different when you wake up, you know. Oh, God, did I really say that? You know. I was like in a panic state thinking, what did I just do? And I wake up with two girls that I used to drink with sitting at the end of my bed. And all I thought of is they had on these little flowery dresses. I couldn't get over it because we're like bar hussies, you know. We went to the pool hall, you know. That's the kind of drinkers we were. I like those bars better. You can drink like you want to drink in a pool hall. You can't really do that at the little snooty places. And the women there, you know, that whole deal. So, you know, I don't have any tattoos, and I got all my teeth, and just, you know, I'm like a real prize at the pool hall. And so, you know, it's true. But my friends are sitting there at the end. They're sitting at the end of the bed, and Michelle is talking this AA to me, and I said, oh my God, I'm being 12-steps. I can't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And they're like, I knew what a 12-step was, and Michelle, is, she's like saying the whole thing. She's telling me about the spiritual side of the program and all this God stuff, da-da-da, and she's saying, and Aaron, you know, you can smell the flowers and hear the birds and the trees. And I'm thinking, I said, I want a smoky bar room, you know, guys in tight jeans. I had no idea what she was even talking about. That didn't make any sense. But then she said, and I'm so sure that this was God speaking through her. She said, Aaron, I can set a goal and I can accomplish it. And I listened. And I listened because, you see, what had happened to me is I hadn't been able to go back to school. I hadn't had a relationship. I hadn't been able to accomplish anything. My will spun. I'm not the kind of alcoholic that lost everything. I never got it. You know? I never had it. I just went from money, cash, paycheck to pay. I never had anything. I drove this old, the USS Aaron is what they called my car. It was like this huge blue, you know, whatever. I drive a car and... Anyways, I never had material stuff, so I didn't lose that. What I lost was Aaron, you know, and so Alcoholics Anonymous has given me Aaron, and it's given me so much more. It's given me, you know, alcoholism is a very powerful disease, but the recovery is more powerful. It's more powerful, and I'm the kind of person today, I don't even really know what to say. It's so hard for me when I get to this point to tell what my life is like, but I, you know, I went to school, and when I was going to fill out the paperwork for my bachelor's degree, then when I was getting my degree, and I started crying. The lady was looking at me like I was crazy, but I was standing there, and I was just thinking, you know, you just don't know what an accomplishment that this is for me. And, I waited for a little while. I tried to play it right with as far as the relationship thing, because I knew that I had never been without a man and I needed it. And I took a couple years off, you know, after I fell in love with the guy in the treatment center. You know, because God sent him to me in the treatment center. But I was so sure of that. Then I took a little time off, so I slid that in there. But I joined the Byron Warehouse group, and they made me the treasurer at 3 months sober. Boy, they were taking a chance with me. And I was responsible to that group to go and buy all of the supplies and coffee, and I would wash those ashtrays. They said, Aaron, when you leave, we don't know who's going to wash the ashtrays around here. And I went to eat meetings. Mike and we said we were going to have a little booklet called AA's Guide to Eating Meetings, and we were going to give like star ratings to, you know, how the food was, you know, 4-star, 3-star meeting or whatever. And you know, I was thrown slap dab in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful that I have been able to participate. And I when I say my prayer in the morning, I say, thank you, God, for allowing me to participate in my life today. Because, you see, for so many years, it just went by. I was drunk, and then I slept. And then I was drunk, and then I slept. And I had no idea. And today I participate in my life. And I participate in my sobriety. And I'm so grateful to be able to do that. And this week, I would have liked to say, I'm participating out. I would like to stop now. I'm almost finished with graduate school, and I'm doing an internship at Kennestone Rehab Hospital, and I'm going to have my degree in speech-language pathology, and it's very exciting. You know, my life has come around. September 12th, I'm getting married to the most kind, wonderful man I've ever known. He never raises his voice at me, you know. He doesn't hit me, throw me over balconies, little things like that used to happen, you know, hang you over by your feet off the balcony. That happened to me, but nothing like that ever happens. And he is a kind, generous, loving person, truly a gift of sobriety to me. And I want to thank everyone for being here. Thanks.